It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
First things first, the league is starting to figure out just how good this Mac Jones guy really is. Are we surprised, though, by the latest praise for the rookie? Yes, Nick. Odell's Rams debut did not go very well, so is Aaron Rodgers right that OBJ has a lot of productive years left? And it is Wednesday. Nick unveiling his new NFL tiers. You may be surprised who he's got at the very, very tippy top. Hi, everyone. Good morning. Welcome to First Things First. Jenna Wolf alongside the aforementioned Nick Wright, Chris Broussard, Kevin Wilds. Nick, Chiefs got their swagger back. Did they get top billing in your tiers? Are you going to tell us or are you going to make us wait till what, 8:02?
Well, yeah, the top line of the tiers probably be revealed around 8:06 a.m. Eastern. The tiers themselves, Jenna, corrected 8:02 a.m. Eastern. And no, I will not be spoiling it right now. I will not be spoiling it.
We know it's the
Chiefs.
Okay,
we'll see.
So what did we learn?
We just showed a bunch of highlights of the Chiefs.
To get from bottom to top. We will get to the tiers in just a few. We got to start in Brooklyn. Warriors, Nets, the blazing Warriors taking on the thought to be blazing Nets, at least at the start of the season. Steph versus KD. Battle of former teammates, battle of the league's top two scorers, battle schmattle. This was all Steph. 9 threes, finished with 37 points. Mm. He got MVP chance from a noticeably pro-Warriors crowd in Brooklyn. Meanwhile, the Nets did not. Season low 19 for KD. Warriors win at 117-99. How about them? They're now a league best 12-2 on the season. Golden State Warriors. Broussard, what did this team prove? What did the Warriors prove last night in this win?
Jenna, they proved that right now, Golden State is the best basketball team in the world. Now, I'm not ready to predict a championship yet. Because I do want to see, I'm not convinced yet that they can win 4 7-game series without Klay Thompson being at least 85% of his old self. I also think in the playoffs, it'll help them to have some size at the rim. And I do think James Wiseman, who's 7 feet tall, I know he's only in his second year, but he could help them at that. So both he and Klay will be back. I want to see what they look like before I'm ready to say this is the team that should win it all. But right now, 1 month into the season, Golden State is the best team in basketball. Look, there was every reason for the Brooklyn Nets to come out last night and put it on the Warriors. I mean, they should have been up for that game. You're facing Kevin Durant's former team, and let's just keep it real. KD has been mocked by some as a Looney Tune for leaving Steph Curry and the Warriors for Kyrie Irving and the Brooklyn Nets. All right, secondly, Brooklyn had to beat a good team. They got a nice record, 10-5. They look pretty good. But they've been beating up on a bunch of bad teams. They're 2-4 now. They were 2-3 entering last night's game against teams above 500. So they had to show that they could beat a good team. And finally, they've got two superstars in their prime, two top 10 players. Golden State, of course, only has one. So Brooklyn should have put it on them. And instead, Golden State comes out and not only beats them, but smokes them. We know the offense, Nick, is spectacular. But the defense is number one in the league right now. Draymond Green did a job on Kevin Durant, holding him under 22 points for the first time this season. And Jenna mentioned, Nick, the MVP chance. I don't know this for a fact, but it would be hard for me to believe that something like that has ever happened in LeBron's house, in Steph's house, in Giannis's house, heck, in Nikola Jokic's house. Okay, that was so disrespectful, and I don't think the fans meant it like, oh, we don't like KD. But in reality, it shows he has not captured that fan base. When it's not only they MVP chance for another player, but your former teammate. So it was an all-out bad night for Brooklyn and a great night, Nick, for the Warriors.
Everything you said is correct. And the MVP chance, we can start there and then expand. A couple weeks ago, I sent out a screenshot of Nets tickets on StubHub. And people criticized me like I was shaming the Nets for having cheap seats because you could get in the building for $7. But those seats weren't being sold by the Nets. They were the secondary market. It was the Brooklyn Nets with Kevin Durant and James Harden. You get in the building for less than a mochaccino, and I thought that was noteworthy. When right across the bridge, you can't get into MSG any night of the week. Hey, there's Jalen Ramsey. Any can't night of the Odell. Week for under, that was actually Beckham. You can't get into MSG any night of the week for under $75. You said he hasn't captured the fan base, because there isn't one. I was at every single Nets home playoff game last year. It has the atmosphere of a somewhat big regular season game, and that was up until Game 7 against Giannis. Game 5, when KD was going off, it had a different feel to it, but that was really because the crowd understood we were watching one of the greatest performances ever. Now on Kevin Durant. He has been the best player in basketball this year, which is why that was such an awful time for his first bad game. Fewest shots made, second fewest rebounds, third fewest assists. He's only been held under 50% twice this year, never under 44. Last night he was under 33% from the field. Zero made shots in the second half. Nash gave up in the fourth. They didn't even play him in the fourth. 0 for 8 in the third, 19 points. Just a miserable game for a guy who spent the afternoon ostensibly, if you go to his Twitter likes, just liking random people who were arguing with Dieter Kurtenbaugh about the Warriors winning the KD-Steph divorce. This is national television against your former team. And by the way, for Harden, the reason Harden doesn't have a championship is because the Warriors kept kicking him in the head. And they get walked all over. And then the MVP chance wilds are just the salt in the wound. Because Broussard is absolutely right. Since Giannis has been an MVP caliber performer, maybe, I don't know what happened his second year. Maybe LeBron came and the Milwaukee fans chanted MVP, but that's not what we're talking about. Guys, once they ascend to MVP level, the only other players who get MVP chance in their building are those guys' teammates when they're trying to be nice. Like Anthony Davis might occasionally get one in Staples. Dwayne Wade got him, obviously, you know. But it's not the opposing team. Right. And I think it is just a regular season game, kind of. Because Nash, after the game, they're like, hey, how come you've lost to the good teams? Lost Chicago, what is it, Golden State, Miami, Milwaukee. And he said, we're not in their class yet. Yeah, and I don't know if you're getting there. Blake Griffin looks cooked. Harden's not a top 10 player at the moment, hasn't been all year. And KD is allowed to have an off night. But as great as KD's been, they've been good but not great. So, yeah, I think the Nets are in real trouble, Wilds.
All right, so I agree with you 100%. And here's the thing about the Warriors, Broussard. Try this theory on for size. What was the hallmark of the Warriors dynasty? It was a fun team. And Steve Kerr came out and said, you know what we're going to do? Play with joy. And Kevin Durant went there, and it's like, I like playing basketball this way. The ball is moving. It was beautiful. It was beautiful basketball, and there was a joyfulness to how they played. I think that's out the window now. Or at least I think it's joy plus viciousness. And it goes back to something Candace Parker put on everybody's radar. It was Warriors-Hawks, and Candace Parker predicted exactly that Steph was going to have 50 to show Trae Young, the young Steph, you're not ready. And Steph went out and dropped 50. Candace Parker, the best sports take of the year. Then, oh, here come the Bulls. The Bulls was like an upstart team. Steph dropped 40. And last night, Steph had 37. He got the MVP chance. And then the crowd was like imploring him to shoot. In the fourth quarter, the game is out of hand. Harden and KD are on the bench. And Steph passes up a three. And the crowd's like, oh. Then they're cheering for a shot that was after the buzzer. They're cheering Steph. So the question I have for you is this, Broussard. Why was Steph in the game? Why did Steve Kerr leave Steph in the game? Game was over. Steve Nash pulled his guy. I think it's because this new-look Warriors have got a little bit of get-back in them. Klay got hurt. KD hurt his Achilles. Close then we arguments. Won 15 games. We were a laughingstock. Last year, we had the play-in game. We lost to the Grizzlies. We lost to the Lakers. We're out. No one thinks we're a champion. Everybody thinks the Nets. Now it's going to be a little bit of viciousness. So I think this new Warriors team is the same joy of the dynasty, the ball moving around, with an added dose of vicious Steph that we hadn't seen before. A little bit of Michael Jordan. I took that personal.
No, I think that's a good take and a smart take, Wiles. And Kerr knew what he was doing. He was hammering in the nails against the Nets.
Yep.
He was sending him a message. This is how much better we are than you, with a smile on his face.
Right.
And the bigger question is, why in the world were Durant and Harden out? First of all, I'm not giving up that
soon. They waved the white flag.
All right. I keep them in the game. I'm trying to win. Secondly, even if it's over, I'm so upset, if I'm Steve Nash, that I'm leaving you out there. I don't care if we're down 35 points. I'm leaving you out there. Just suck it up. Deal with it. Hate this feeling so that it doesn't happen again. And I got to say this. I am so disappointed in James Harden, Nick. So disappointed in James Harden.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying he doesn't return. I know you believe it's the free throws, the refs calling it differently. I think there's some truth to that for sure, but I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that it's not just an excuse. In a couple of weeks, it's going to be a full-blown excuse that, I rehabbed all summer, I wasn't ready, didn't get to play. Yeah, I'm giving you a little more time on that, Harden, but this James Harden will not cut it for the Nets. They need Harden to have a chance to win it.
To have any chance. I thought this was one of the best opening blocks we've ever done for a show. I agree with almost everything Wild said, with one exception. Candace Parker is brilliant, but the sports take of the year is Mahomes turned his season around with the one pass. Just for the record.
God.
That's
you know,
the sports take
you
of the
just
year.
Ruined
I mean,
a
just
good
for
segment.
The record, it's
we
the sport prediction
segment,
of the year.
Jenna.
I just want you to know,
we
Wild.
Gotta,
just,
we got to
well,
that, that,
now
year,
we
Wild.
Know who's number one. My goodness.
Hey, we can have this conversation again, revisit great takes. These two teams are going to play one more time on January 29th at Golden State. So we'll revisit the takes, Candace Parker's and yours, Nick. Back talking OBJ. He had a rough go of it in his Rams debut. Is Aaron Rodgers right that Odell has a lot of really productive years left? Talk about that next for some first.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Drawing a blank. Talking... Excuse me, Odell Beckham Jr. now. It was a disappointing debut for the star receiver Monday night. Targeted just three times, finished with just two catches, totaled just 18 yards. Aaron Rodgers, who was part of the Packers' effort to recruit Odell, chimed in about his debut, about Odell's debut. He said this, "I wouldn't judge one performance. Obviously, he's got a ways to go to learn the offense. Similar offense that we run. Not one you can just jump in at certain positions and know it right away. So I would definitely reserve judgment on writing off OBJ. I think he's got a lot of really productive years left in his career." Aaron Rodgers really jumping to the end there. Broussard, Aaron Rodgers' comments on OBJ are blank.
They were good looking out, Jenna. Now, in that interview, Rodgers said that he and OBJ have a great relationship and have been friends for years, okay? So this was one friend looking out for another, speaking positively about him. Because what Aaron Rodgers really should have said is he should have come here. He should be on the Pack. All right, that would have been a better move for OBJ. Troy Aikman, the great Troy Aikman, Hall of Fame quarterback, had an interesting quote yesterday on Dallas Radio. Here it is. "I think Matthew now feels some of the pressure that maybe Baker Mayfield felt of, hey, we got to get this guy, OBJ, involved. And he's in the game right now because he's going to take this deep route," so on and so forth. Go to the second part of the quote. Is that here it is. "It's not good. And it's not good playing quarterback when you feel pressure to get the ball to one particular player. It just doesn't work." Now, look, I think this quote from Aikman is premature. OBJ had nothing to do with that loss the other night, okay? He had no practice time. You can't put that on him. All right, however, I do agree with Aikman's philosophy, all right, and his thinking in that when you have a celebrity diva receiver who is a big, huge personality, one of the biggest in the league, it can be difficult. Because receiver's the most dependent position in the league. If I've got a diva defensive player, he can do his own thing regardless of the other. I get that they're somewhat connected. But he's living on his own. And he's going to ball whether, no matter what anybody else does. If I got a diva running back, I just hand him the ball. He does his thing. Even quarterback can control his own destiny. A receiver cannot control his own destiny. All right, so when you got a diva one that everybody's watching, how many targets, how many catches, is he fitting in, is he happy, is this working, does he get along with the quarterback? That can be nauseating for a QB. And I think that a celebrity like OBJ has to go to a quarterback who's unimpeachable. Now, he'll have his moments with Stafford, but to be his best, the quarterback has to be unimpeachable. So if he's not getting OBJ the ball, if OBJ doesn't have several targets one game, you're not blaming the unimpeachable quarterback, the Aaron Rodgers, the Tom Brady, the Patrick Mahomes. Stafford will get blamed. If OBJ doesn't start getting catches and make an impact, people will look at Matthew Stafford because he's not unimpeachable. Aaron Rodgers, OBJ would have been better, Nick, in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. Or Tampa Bay or somebody.
Or maybe Kansas City. Listen, I think Aaron Rodgers' comments on Odell Beckham Jr. are measured, which very few comments on Odell are measured these days. I think he's right. I mean, the guy was on the field for 15 snaps, was targeted three times. I understand one of those targets was a pick. Did Odell cut off his route? Yeah. Was that also a terrible decision by Stafford? Yeah. But these are measured comments. But Liz, I do understand the criticism of Odell in totality. When you look at it, there is a legitimate question. Does he make his teammates better? The guy's never won a playoff game. He underachieved despite a massive record-setting contract. And, you know, his supporters will say it's always been the fault of the supporting cast, not his own. Oh, wait, hold on, what's that? Oh, I'm sorry, I was describing Matt Stafford there, not Odell Beckham Jr. Oh. But we never hear it that way. Oh, wait, never won a playoff game, record-setting contract? Do you actually make your teammates better? You're actually playing the most important position, quarterback, not wide receiver. But God forbid the quarterback who actually throws the interception be blamed for the interception. It must be someone else's fault. Couldn't be Stafford's fault. We've never seen Stafford make head-scratching decisions. Wait, we have his whole career. So, yeah, I think these are measured comments. But, yeah, I'm glad that once again, if a Matt Stafford team slightly underachieves, we'll have a reason to know. It can't be Stafford's fault. Listen, what do you want a quarterback to do? It's not like he has major impact on the game like a wide receiver does. What do you want a quarterback to do, Wilds?
Okay. It was a weird throw. It was a weird interception. Let's just say that. And if Odell wasn't on the team, I don't know if he's like, you know what? Maybe Cooper Kupp is down there somewhere. Just saying, it's a weird thing. So, Broussard, I take you into a little bit behind the scenes of the inner workings of the show. You know, we got the bud list, Broussard's underdress list. I also have an undercover watch list for the bud list. I have my own list. I'm always like, what's going on the bud list? And I sort of feed it to Broussard, like, what do you think? He's like, well, let's keep those on the back burner. So, Broussard, question for you. When does Odell go on the bud list? Oh, all right, can't one game, not that, and they got a bye week. They got the Packers. On the bud list against the Packers or no? Okay, suppose he doesn't do anything against the Packers. Then you've got Jacksonville. Is Odell supposed to score a touchdown in Jacksonville? I would hope so. Then you got the Cardinals. At some point, national media, the Rams themselves will be like, hey, what's the deal with this guy? So, Broussard, how long of a grace period are you giving Odell and Matthew Stafford to work?
Well, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, OBJ was on the bud list a few weeks ago. I'm pretty sure he was.
That's right.
Look, and that's what I'm talking about, Wiles, with Aikman's comments. All right, OBJ, if he doesn't get a bunch of catches in the next two games, people will say, what's going on with OBJ? What's wrong? Is it working? And the Rams don't need that. It's not really OBJ's fault, but it's just the persona he's created and the celebrity he's become. But I will watch him. You know, he might end up on the bud list. I might want to inspire him.
You know who has been on the bud list multiple times, Chris Broussard? Patrick Mahomes.
He should be so lucky.
Can we talk about Patrick Mahomes? Mahomes got back on track Sunday night, blowing out the Raiders.
Stretch.
Question now, will KC be back on top of Nick's NFL tiers as a result? First things first. It is 8:04 on a Wednesday morning, which means it is 4 minutes past 8. Also means it officially NFL tier time. Hey, week 10 was a doozy. A number of blowouts, a few surprises. Look at you, Tampa. And then you had, like we talked about, Odell's first game as a Ram. Still got 8 more fun-filled weeks of regular season madness to go. But, Nick, take us through your NFL tiers entering week 11.
Yeah, if there's ever a time you need the tiers, it's this week. I'm not one for cross-media criticism, but still, folks should check out the ESPN.com power rankings this morning because they are literally the standings. It's unbelievable. Like, folks, why write the article if you're just going to rank them by record? Here's an accurate depiction. Bottom to top. Well, if shots fired, it's just the truth. Sorry, NFL Nation. All right, there. The bottom two rows don't matter. The top two rows of the bottom, still alive, but barely. Going to have to win like 4 of your next 5. You don't get names. When you don't get names on your tiers, you know you're in trouble. All right, next grouping. A little copyright infringement by me. Panthers, Colts, Vikings, Niners. As Kevin Wilds would say, I'm watching. Could you make the playoffs? Any of you could. I didn't think you could a few weeks ago. Now all of you, I think, can. Get it together, group. Chargers, you've lost 3 of 4. Saints, you lost back-to-back games. Bengals, you lost back-to-back games. Steelers, you just tied the Lions, which counts as 3 losses. Get it together, group. All of you could still make the playoffs, but you got to get it together. All right, show me the next grouping. here, because by the way, we are now up to the top 10 teams in football. GOAT, respect. So I have real concerns about the rosters of these teams. The Ravens defense has not been what it once was. I have concerns about the Patriots offense as a whole. However, Lamar is turning into the greatest dual threat quarterback ever. Belichick is the greatest coach ever. So either of those teams in a singular playoff game is going to demand respect of its opponent. That's why they are at the fringe of the top 10. Now we're at the top 8. Give me the next grouping.
Let's go.
This one's tough. 3 losses? Really? All of these teams, if you would have looked at their schedule before the start of the year and said today, November 18th, what's the maximum amount of losses they could have? You would say worst case scenario would be 3. And they all have 3. Now, they haven't been exactly the ones you would have expected. Like Tampa, you would have been like, well, if they're going to have 3 losses, they lose to Dallas. They beat Dallas, but then they lost to Washington. The Bills, you'd be like, well, if they're going to have 3 losses, they lose to the Chiefs. They beat the Chiefs, but they lost to the Jags. So these teams, we want to believe they're great. But the fact that they're all sitting at 3 losses right now is concerning. This one's tough. Injury alert. God, listen, these two teams are excellent. However, Kyler's now missed back-to-back games. Derrick Henry's obviously done for at least the regular season, maybe the whole year. They deserve to be considered true contenders. But when you're both missing your best players, it's hard to put you up top with the top 3 teams in football. Give me the number 1 contenders. Now, I know what your immediate reaction is going to be. Nick, the Chiefs? You really have the Chiefs on the same level as the Packers right after they beat the Packers. Why wouldn't they be higher? Well, the answer is, I don't know if people know, the Packers were missing a key player or two in that game. So I think it's fair to have the Chiefs and the Packers on the same level. Also, Kansas City, right now, I said it Monday, I will say it again. If you let any playoff team in the AFC draft their AFC opponent, do you really think any teams picking to play the Chiefs before they pick the Titans, picking to play the Chiefs before they play the Patriots? Maybe there's an argument that some people would rather play the Chiefs than the Bills, but you know who doesn't feel that way? Jacksonville, who beat the Bills. And then the favorites.
Yeah.
There's real bad rumors going on about what it means to be a favorite on the tiers. And Broussard might get to them. The Cowboys. Cowboys, 3 times. They're like Jack Nicholson at the Oscars. 3 times they've been atop the tiers. Cowboys, they had a hiccup game. They weren't ready for Denver. We're going to give them a mulligan. They responded to that by annihilating those scrappy Atlanta Falcons. They retake the top spot for the 3rd time this year atop the tiers. There it is, Broussard. I've got to say, I think the committee did great work. Committee was a little committee. We met early yesterday because we all had to get to Barclays to do MVP chance for Steph.
Yep.
We started those, by the way, the committee, dual action committee. But I really think the committee did a great job. Your thoughts?
All right, Nick, you know this. Usually I rip your tears to shreds. And as I'm watching you unveil level after level after level, I'm sitting here thinking, you know what? I'm shocked. These are actually good. I agree.
Thanks, buddy.
I agree. And the titles, too. The titles worked for the first time in a while. But then you had to blow it. And America might not understand yet where I'm going. So let me let you in on a little secret, America. You're looking at the tiers and saying, wow, Nick's got Dallas at 1. He really is objective. He's not just blowing smoke when he talks about how objective he is. But America, sad to say, no. He is not objective. It's the same old Homer, Kansas City bias that we've always seen with the tiers. And here's why. Nick's tiers have become, as opposed to the Bud List, which inspires players to play their best football, Nick's tiers have become a death knell, a predictor of doom. All right, the kiss of death. Look at this, America. 6 of the last 7 teams at 1 lost that week. 6 of the last 7. And guess who the Dallas Cowboys, 1 this week in Nick's tiers, happened to play this weekend?
Kansas City Chiefs.
The Kansas City Chiefs.
I gotta look.
All that
Nick has just, he has just used his negative mojo of the tears to sabotage the Dallas Cowboys and all but guarantee a victory for his Chiefs. The Chiefs will beat Dallas, get rocket down because Dallas is number one on the tiers. And next week, that'll be interesting. Will Nick put the Chiefs at number one, knowing that it's going to mean a loss? So, Nick, you had me at hello, but you lost me at goodbye with the Cowboys.
Listen,
at number one.
I don't believe in curses or black cats or stepping under ladders. I just believe in dripping in objectivity. So, all I know is this. I didn't realize the Chiefs played the Cowboys this week. That seems like a big game. We'll probably talk about it at some point. That is extra pressure on the Cowboys' wilds. It also means the Chiefs could be all the way back, but if you lose to the number one team in football, I mean, there's no shame in that. I mean, you lose to the best team in the league. So, I mean, there's a lot to juggle here. But overall, wilds, I think Broussard's point is great job by committee. So thank you. I appreciate that on behalf of the committee. Your thoughts, wilds?
Well, I agree about losing to the team at the top. Like, even if you take them to overtime, like the Mac Jones and the Patriots did. So that retroactively, you said that was a bad loss, actually a good loss. So here's the thing. Everyone's saying, oh, there's so much parity in this year. It's so weird. I can't figure out any team can beat any other team. Every team has got a bad loss. Do they, though? Are you sure the New England Patriots have a bad loss? Because I don't think they do. Let's look at the seven AFC playoff teams, because I think your Patriots need to move up the tiers a little bit. Week four, Tennessee loses to the Jets. Horrible. Chargers got blown out by the Ravens. Then the Ravens start feeling themselves. They got blown out by the Bengals. Then on Thursday, they were lost. Lamar's like, I don't know what's going on here. Lose to the Dolphins. Kansas City was shut out in the first half, even though Nick has turned the second half of that game, which was a blowout, into a good statistic. He lost 27-3. Buffalo was asleep at the wheel, went down to Jacksonville, lost. Steelers, I'm counting this as a loss. I don't count half a tie as half a win. I'm a glass half full guy in my real life, glass half empty guy when you're playing the Lions and you tie. So, Nicholas, where is the Patriots' bad loss? It doesn't exist. Oh, they lost to the Dolphins. Yeah, by 1 point, week one in Mac Jones' premier game. No one on the earth, literally, no one on planet Earth, from the North Pole to the South Pole, said, wow, horrible loss for the Patriots. Horrible, ugly, disgusting loss, 17-16 in Mac Jones. Oh, a horrible loss. No one said it, so don't try to retroactively say it. And here's why that statistic is important. All of those teams have some sort of Achilles heel, flaw, weird thing happening. The Patriots have not. They lost to a good Saints team. They lost by 1 point in Mac Jones' first game. They lost to the mighty Tampa Bay Bucs when Brady's worst game. And they lost to Dallas, who was at the top of the tiers, in overtime.
Okay.
That's it. So all these other teams have flaws, but the Patriots are running around there like Greek gods, and they don't have Achilles heels. What? Nice try. There's no Achilles heels to this team. We have no bad losses.
Okay.
It's true, and
this
you know
it.
This
is such a fascinating thing, and we can do this. We could do this in a lot of walks of life. Like, I've never been, as a teenager, I was never arrested. As long as you remove the time I was arrested. What? Huh? Can't do that. You can't say the Patriots have no bad losses as long as we remove the bad loss. You're right, Wilds.
It wasn't
a bad
loss.
In the moment, it wasn't. But then when the Dolphins went 2 months without winning, can we show Wilds' fancy graphic again? Because I don't know if you did this or if our production team, who is as embarrassed by this take as I am, just screwed you over with it. Show Wilds' bad losses graphic and riddle me this, genius. The Ravens. So the loss for the Ravens against the Dolphins is a bad loss. But the loss for the Patriots against the Dolphins is not a bad loss. Oh, that's fascinating. That's
wasn't interesting. My one point.
And you're also saying, so it's margin. Okay, got it. So the Chiefs losing by three scores to the Titans, who are 8-2, is a bad loss. Yep. The Patriots losing by two scores, by 15 points, to Jameis Winston, not a bad loss. Interesting. Fascinating. Okay. I'm gonna have to noodle over that one a little bit. And then, if we're talking about bad losses, we should also maybe do a what is the single worst win any team has? I would argue needing a furious fourth quarter comeback to beat long-necked Davis Mills maybe counts. Okay.
Because that's argue what the Jordan Patriots Love, need.
So
I would argue, Chiefs Jordan Love. I would argue the Jordan Love. Okay. Everyone knows that.
Okay, they didn't need a comeback. They actually led,
try to
they actually
that
led that
from the
game
Chiefs
from start to finish. Led the game for 56 minutes. But otherwise, it's a solid take by you.
50?
So listen, both sides of the ball, buddy. So here's the deal. That's fine. I agree. The Patriots are actually, I maybe should have them higher, Jenna, because if you remove all their losses, they're undefeated. Patriots are undefeated if you just remove the losses. So maybe they can go 16-0. Just remove the losses. What a ridiculous take. The committee rejects that.
Well, why don't we stick with the Patriots since that went so well? Talk some Mac Jones. Fox Bet Sportsbook has Mac second in odds to win Offensive Rookie of the Year behind Ja'Marr Chase. Nick, I'm not sure this is how you want me to follow that up with, but if people underestimated Mac Jones up until this point, we got to take a break. We're back after this.
I primed the pump there for this.
Talking Mac Jones now, the Patriots rookie quarterback had himself a game Sunday against the Browns. Maybe the best game we've seen as far as throwing the ball downfield. The latest came in what's turning into a pretty nice rookie season to the surprise of many, but not to the surprise of the Honey Badgers. Chief safety Tyrann Mathieu tweeted this yesterday. Mac Jones wasn't trendy enough for y'all at first. Now y'all love him. Y'all funny day in and day out. Y'all should be on Comedy Central. He said, you don't throw sidearm. Wonder who he's talking about. Or run fast. Can't imagine who. So people knocked him. Dude can play quarterback, period. High praise from one of the league's top defenders, Nick. Nick, what do you make of Tyrann Mathieu's praise of Mac Jones?
Yeah, I understand what he's saying, which is if you were way down on him coming into the draft and now you think he's great, you're being a little too fickle. But I'm the resident Mac Jones critic on this show, I guess, but I've been consistent. Everyone understood he was the most pro-ready of any of the quarterbacks. And I thought everyone understood he also had probably the most limited ceiling. Now, I didn't understand the Zach Wilson hype, and I didn't watch Trey Lance. He had opted out the COVID season really made it to where he couldn't play. And then, so you're going to watch North Dakota State in 2019. I didn't. It just, you know, full disclosure. So I thought Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields were clearly better, and I still do. I understand you think I'm being unfair when I say, yeah, it was an amazing game. He threw for 198 yards. And you make the point earlier, yeah, because they sat him down. Brian Hoyer came in. Yeah, and Brian Hoyer, another pro-ready quarterback with a limited ceiling, came in and threw for 98 or 89 on a drive, two drives. So maybe it's that Mac Jones just awesome, or maybe it's that Belichick systematically de-pantsed everything about the Browns. I have not seen a single thing that makes me believe Mac Jones is going to be a top six quarterback in his own conference. So pro ready, limited ceiling. That's what I still think about him.
Okay. Do you think that Mac Jones will go 0 for Super Bowls in his entire career if he has a long tenure with Bill Belichick and the Patriots? You think he'll go over Super Bowl?
I don't think he'll win a Super Bowl.
Okay. I think Mac Jones's ceiling is holding up a Super Bowl MVP trophy. That's his ceiling. I'm not going to guarantee he gets there, even though our dynasty is back on track after a little gap year. But Broussard, here's the thing that I think was what made Mac Jones' analysis tricky. And I think two narratives have died from Mac Jones' short NFL tenure. The first narrative that died was that the Alabama quarterback is a product of Nick Saban and the Alabama mystique. And I think that makes guys tough to judge. Here's who has won national championships with Alabama under center. Greg McElroy won one. A.J. McCarron won two. Jake Coker won one. Jalen and Tua split that one. And Mac Jones. I think Mac Jones is better than all those guys already. So I think that makes it hard because you look at it like, wow, good stats, a winner. But is that just Nick Saban? The other tricky thing is, last year when Mac Jones came out, six Alabama guys went in the first round, tied the record. So I think it's a fair question, including the Heisman Trophy winner. It's a fair question when you're judging a guy out of Alabama, like, well, is it him or is it all the talent surrounding him, including on the defensive side of the ball? Here's the other thing. I think we prematurely called the death of the pocket passer. I think we thought everything was going to be this mobile quarterback was the wave of the future. And if you could hang on, if you were Tom Brady, if you were the GOAT, you could hang on. If you were Ben Roethlisberger, maybe you could hang on, but people were calling for him to get up out of there and put somebody that can move around in there. Mac Jones has 59 rushing yards this year. That's it. And look, did we miss on maybe a few first downs? Probably a few fourth and shorts. Yeah, maybe. I always thought it would be nice to have like a Cam Newton package, so I wanted to keep Cam. But overall, I think Mac Jones' ceiling is winning a Super Bowl. Maybe he won't be as good as Josh Allen someday. All right, guess what? I don't care. If we win the Super Bowl, that's all that matters.
I agree with you, Wiles. That is his ceiling, especially with Belichick. There's no question about it. I'm not guaranteeing it like you. But I agree, there's a shot there. And Nick, look, Tyrann Mathieu, one of the beloved leaders of your beloved Chiefs, was not tweeting at you, because you haven't yet hopped on the Mac Jones bandwagon. But then again, he was tweeting at you because he said, oh, the guy's not trendy. He doesn't throw sidearm. He doesn't run fast. And that's why you don't like Mac. Not enough bells and enough whistles, and I'm guessing he don't have a big neck. I mean, he must not have a thick neck, thick enough neck for you to like him. Because Mac Jones is getting it done, full of intangibles, overflowing with intangibles, and you mock him for his dink and dunk game, but he is throwing dimes when they let him. He picked right through double coverage to Kendrick Bourne against the Browns for a touchdown. Puts it in the bread basket for Hunter Henry. I mean, the dude is dropping dimes, Nick. Get on the bandwagon or Tyrone will be tweeting about you pretty soon. Yes. Tyrone.
Patriots back in action tomorrow night, by the way. Undisputed starts right now. Have a good day.